It is Tuesday afternoon, and that's David Crowder. That means it's time to talk about hope, life, and this is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. And today I am joined by a good friend and pastor here in Knoxville, Jason Hayes of Shoreline Church. Thank you so much for taking some time out and joining us here.
Oh, man, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
So you went to Nashville yesterday, and you got to serve as chaplain, which means you pray before the session. But that was awesome. So you went and visited with Jason Zachary, who's a representative from out west and in West Knoxville, and then your son was a page. What did your son think? Was he?
Yeah, I've got three boys, and my oldest son Hayden, he's 10 years old, and so he was taking it all in for the first time. And pretty cool, you know, cool to see him dressed up in his red, white, and blue tie.
That's right. That's right.
And his baby blue pants. But more importantly, really cool to see him kind of begin to see what the political process looks like firsthand. And man, I tell you what, those folks, they were getting after it yesterday. Lots to accomplish on the floor yesterday.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. So that's a great honor. You know, we were talking before we went on the air, and when I worked at the legislature, for a political nerd walking through the hallways and getting on the elevator, I used to just think, man, who's been on this elevator? Because Elvis has spoke on the floor before. And I remember thinking, man, Elvis has walked through here. Governors, presidents, you know, world leaders have walked through there, you know, at different times. And so just a really, really interesting and gorgeous place. If you haven't visited the state capitol, go to Nashville. Take some time to do that. You won't regret it. So Jason Hayes is pastor of Shoreline Church. Jason, tell us a little bit about you. I know that you have some family here, and you kind of left Knoxville, then you came back to Knoxville a few years ago. So just kind of give us an introduction of who Jason Hayes is.
Yeah, so I actually grew up here in Knoxville, good, bad, or ugly. I'm a graduate of Farragut High School, and I am proud of that. But, yeah, so spent most of my life here in West Knoxville. My mom's a public school teacher for many, many years here in this community. And so I actually came to Christ around 17, connected to a local church here in this community, began to develop a call to ministry. The Lord would lead myself and my wife to move to Nashville. We lived in Nashville for 8 years, and I served on a staff of a great church there, as well as served as the National Young Adult Ministry Specialist for Lifeway Christian Resources. And after that journey, the Lord began to prompt our heart back to a place that we never thought we'd come, and that was back to Knoxville, not because we didn't love it, but because, frankly, Nashville had just become home. We had three little boys, and all three of them had been born there. We experienced really significant biblical community there. It was just a sweet season of life, and the Lord yet still had something different for us. And so we're now about 4.5 years into the journey of planting Shoreline Church, and it has been really a remarkable thing to see what the Lord's done.
Yeah, and so with that, what my question, and always it's interesting. I've been in church my entire life, Southern Baptist my entire life, and the role as Executive Director of Hope, I get to visit a lot of churches and speak with a lot of different pastors. But my question is always, what's the importance? Now, we know biblically what's the importance, but I love to hear pastors give this answer. So what is the importance of the local church? You know, people at times will say, well, when two or three are gathered.
Yeah, sure.
So if we're in our living room, or if we're up on Mount Lacan, or if we're at Neyland Stadium, there's 100,000 of us. You know what? So, but what is the importance of the local church in your mind?
Yeah, you know, I think maybe I would just go back. Obviously, as you said, we look at the biblical mandate and the role of the church as God's used it and ordained it to be the vehicle for really the expansion of the kingdom throughout the world. But just even for me really personally, you know, when we began to sense the Lord calling us back to Knoxville, you know, we thought, who do we really need another church in Knoxville? You know, we thought probably we were probably skeptical at best of most church planters that were my age. I'm 39 now, but that was 5 years ago. So, you know, kind of a young 30-something church planter. I just seen too many people do it for the wrong reasons, whether it was because they were mad at somebody and wanted to do something down the street, or they wanted to show people.
That doesn't happen in the church.
Yeah. They wanted to show people what they would deem as true musical worship was, or you know, tired of dealing with committees or some type of governance. And candidly, that's just not the reason you plant a church. You plant a church because you have a passion for the gospel and you have a passion for the community, and you want to see those worlds come together. And so for us, that was it. I mean, the value of the church was that we were beginning to see all these people that I had grown up with, all these relationships that we had, even in our early years of marriage here in Knoxville. We just saw story after story after story of people who were hurting and people who needed hope in something bigger than what this world has to offer. And so that's the value of the church for us. You know, it's not just about programs and about ministries. Behind all of those things are people who all have a story, and their story really matters to God.
Yeah, and I think as we look at the big church, the capital C church, we can look at the landscape of our country currently and see people are hurting all over the place.
Sure.
And they're concerned about tomorrow, and they're scared about tomorrow, or they think that just because they have something inside of them that they can make it on their own without that assistance. And I just, you know, I've looked at even in my own family and other people's families and in the last, you know, month or so, or the last few months, and everybody was focused on an election, and I'm looking at it and going, well, we have people that have lost wives, we have people that have lost husbands, that have lost kids and grandparents and dads and moms and jobs and all kinds of stuff going on that without the local church, without a community of believers saying, look, not only am I here for you, but I'm actually praying for you. I'm actually loving you. I'm actually here to serve. I'm actually here to help. What has that meant in your own life, even as a pastor, to say, no, I have a body of believers that care deeply about me and my family and love us, not just because I'm their pastor, but because I'm their brother?
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely critical. We actually have spent the majority of our day today. I've been with our staff today, and we've been planning out our next sermon series that'll start after Easter. And we're basically unpacking some of the myths of cultural Christianity. And one of those is that we can love Jesus and basically ignore his church. Mm-hmm. And we're just really continuing to try to elevate the idea that God intended for us to exist in community. I mean, we see God himself exist in community, and the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit were made in his image. And as a result, we were never intended to do life alone. And so we not only teach that to our people, but for me, just as a husband, as a father, as a leader in our community, and as a shepherd to a lot of people that the Lord's entrusted us with, you know, I have to have that. And so those early morning breakfasts with brothers that hold me accountable are critical. You know, those times with our elders late in the evenings mm-hmm. are critical. But also some of the less formal stuff about, hey, I'm just hanging out on Friday night with friends from our body who know the struggles that we're going through. They know the victories that are happening in our life. They know things about our kids. They show up at our kids' ball games, whatever that may look like. Man, it is invaluable, and we not only see that practically, but as I said earlier, we also see that biblically.
Yeah, and so as we walk through that and look at the importance of going to a local church, of intentionally getting up on Sundays or whatever days, you know, some churches meet on Saturdays, but whatever that looks like, or going to small group that may meet throughout the week, and the importance of that. There's a blog that's being shared on Facebook right now, at least in my news feed. I've seen it quite a bit, and millennials are really latching on to it, and it's saying, you're the reason why I don't attend your church. You're the reason why I left your church. And the premise of the article, to really kind of narrow it down, is it's a mindset of, I'm here, serve me, instead of, I'm here, where can I serve?
Right.
And so the thought process is, okay, I've made my way to your church. Now, what are you going to do to make me feel good? What are you going to do to make me feel complete? And that's just not the mindset of a believer who is looking for a local church.
Yeah, we have, we've actually, over the last three Sundays, have actually met in the round. And the reason that we've done that, to give a little bit more description of that, that frankly just means we're not all looking at the back of each other's heads in the midst of a service. Instead, we've moved our our stage and our band and things of that sort to the center of our room and kind of turn to everyone facing each other. And we say that we do that on a fairly regular basis for the reason of reminding people that we were never intended to be spectators, for one thing. You know, we have this mindset that says, I'm going to come in, you're going to give me something, you're going to do something mm-hmm. for me, you're going to do something for my kids, you're going to do something for my family, and then we're going to leave. But that's just not the biblical picture of the church. And so our goal of even doing something as simple as going in the round for the last 3 weeks is just to remind people that when we have moments that we want to be alone with God, that's appropriate, but let's do that when we are alone with God.
Right.
When we come together as the body of Christ, which there's great value in biblically, then let us not only give testimony to God about his faithfulness, but let's give testimony to one another about God's faithfulness. And so, yeah, I mean, we are in this community, you know, not only in the efforts of trying to, I guess, build people's understanding and construct people's understanding of the gospel, but to a certain degree, even deconstruct people's understanding of the gospel and what the church is, and then build it back, not with what we've constructed and not what we've decided, but instead something that Jesus is really pleased with and what he called us towards.
Yeah, and I think we saw that even a few weeks ago, right before you went into the round, you asked the congregation, you asked the folks there to, hey, pick your chair up, stack it up.
Yep.
That's a very little thing. But what you saw was everybody in the building picked their chair up, moved it to the side, and just like that, you had it moved.
Right.
Now, a lot of people listening may go, well, that's a silly example. But from someone that used to be on the staff of a church, that's a huge deal.
Yeah.
That means your people are saying, yeah, we want to help, we want to serve. I know this past Sunday y'all cleaned out a lot of things and pulled up carpet, and you had people show up to help with that. Those are things to say, look, yeah, a sermon may not happen at 2:00 this afternoon, but if you can help us do some things, this is part of being the local church.
Right. Yeah, well, we actually reference to what many churches call members as partners.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason we do that is just, you know, our there's no shame in being a member of a church. In fact, obviously, that's a valuable thing. But I think for us in kind of our current cultural landscape, so many times we hear the word membership associated with any number of other things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unfortunately for me, I'm a member of a gym. That doesn't always mean that I participate
right.
in the gym,
right.
You know. And so I think just whatever that may be, we have a tendency to kind of look towards membership as something we take from, whereas we actually call what most churches call membership partnership. And so we just believe that partners take a hold of the vision, they contribute to the vision and the mission of the organization, and hopefully buy into something bigger than themselves to push the kingdom forward.
Yeah, and in the same way at Hope Resource Center, we see partners. We have partners
right.
with Shoreline. We have partners with 50-plus churches in the community and individuals and businesses and all of that, because it's the same thing. It is, you are coming with us
right.
to impact the community. And so at a church level, and we'll get into this here in a second, in talking about the cultural impact that the local church can have. But I do think it's, for me, it's been exciting to watch the local church in a number of different areas here in Knoxville step up to the plate. We mm-hmm. saw it with the fires in mm-hmm. in the Smokies. We see it with shoe drives and with medical mission trips and with all kinds of things where they're saying, look, it's not enough to just come in here and sit in a chair on Sunday or a pew or whatever. We have to then go out. We have to be in each other's homes. We have to be present in our neighborhoods.
That's right.
We have to know who we live next to. We have to love those that we work with, those that disagree with us. And I, for me personally, the local church, that's what has driven that for me.
Yeah, sure.
And so it's very important in this community. So why the name Shoreline? Is it simply just because you're close to the shore, or what was the reason for the
yeah,
name?
Yeah, we hear from a decent portion of people that say, now are you guys originally from the beach or anything of that sort? And I say, no, I'm afraid not. But, you know, we actually named Shoreline for a couple of reasons. One is it does speak towards kind of the geographic proximity as to where we're at. We are in this kind of quaint little lake community near North Shore and all of that water that's out there. Secondly, you see the shoreline has been historically this place of life and refreshment for communities all around the world. And so where people come together and kind of gather for something that is life-giving. And then most significantly, we see some of Jesus' most significant ministry happened on or near the shoreline. And so our hope is that people would experience Jesus, within the parameters of our ministry in a very similar way as to those who were originally walking on this earth with him.
Yeah, amen. Well, this is Andrew Wood with Hope Resource Center and Jason Hayes from Shoreline. We'll be back to talk more in a sec. You're the king of everything, the one who taught the wind. And that's the latest from Chuck Hooten, the Shoreline Worship right there, right? That's I hope he's listening and hears that. This is Andrew, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center, joined today by Jason Hayes of Shoreline Church, and certainly thankful for that. So we just talked about the importance of the local church, the role that the local church plays. What I want to spend the next few minutes doing is talking about kind of 2017. So we don't have flying cars yet. I would have thought we'd had that by now, but we're in 2017, and so I think every year, one of the roles of the local church and the administration at a church will say, okay, what are our plans for 2017? So you lay out series. You talked about a new series that's coming up after Easter. Right now you're in Fruit of the Spirit series and going through that. What would you like to see as the pastor of Shoreline, and if you can speak for the other staff at Shoreline, for 2017, what type of cultural impact are you hoping to see here and through the work at Shoreline?
Yeah, so that's a great question. You know, we actually have been a part of what we're calling a shine emphasis for 2017. And it's obviously based out of these passages in Scripture where we see that not only the light of Christ is to shine to us, directly to us, but also to shine through us to one another and then ultimately to the world around us. And so, you know, we have begin to really develop our relationships with partners intentionally. We've tried to do that locally and globally, and as we've done that, we're seeing the Lord do some really cool stuff in the midst of that. But I think our goal for the year is candidly that we would just make disciples who make disciples who make disciples who make disciples, and we often consider that to be something that would be exclusively put in the context of our church, but we would say that would be a failure. Our goal is to not just make disciples of one another. Right. Hopefully we are disciples, but rather that we would actually reach into our communities. So our efforts are not simply to draw people to us, but rather to go where people are, whether that's on the ball field, whether that's in the community organizations, whether that's in the businesses that our people are employed in, that they would be a gospel influence. And so we have a couple of other initiatives. As a result of the Shine Initiative, we're also saying that we hope that people would be willing to share their faith with folks multiple times throughout the year. We obviously recognize that we're not in control of the fruit, but we are in control of our efforts to share the good news of Jesus and not to share it as simply, hey, it'd be great for you to come to church sometime, but instead to point people to Christ first, and then we'll trust their attendance to church. We'll come soon after that.
Yeah, and so as we look at that, and you know the Shine focus for 2017, be kind of engaged in the community, be engaged in your subdivision, in your neighborhood, in your workplace, politically, if that is where God has called you. What is missed when the church is not engaged? I'm sure you're familiar with this. There's a new book out called The Benedict Option, where it talks about,
right.
And to be fair to the author, the book is talking about, hey, this is just one way to look at Christians in engaging or even pulling back from political engagement, pulling back from, you know, certain types of engagement in our communities, because what the author would say is we're not necessarily the Christian, quote-unquote, country that we used to be. And so, you know, I have a number of opinions on that. We don't have to get into the weeds of that. But I do think it's important to think through those things. So what does it mean for a Christian to be engaged? What is missed from the community? What is missed from our cities? What is missed from those areas, when we pull back and say, you know, that's for the lost, we're not the lost, so we're not going to engage there.
Right. I think there's historically this reality that the church was a culture shaper. We look at some of the greatest pieces of art, some of the greatest music, some of the greatest politicians, all were being grown, developed, were being pushed forward by the local church. And as a result, the culture was diverse. It was beautiful in many ways. But the more specific part of it, it was Christ exalting in many pockets. And so what happens is if we simply say one of two things, we're either going to escape the culture, we're going to simply just pull away, or what we have a tendency to do as the church is that we just say, we're going to look at the culture, we're going to try to see what's appealing to people, mm-hmm. then we put Jesus next to that culture and hope that it makes Jesus look appealing is really faulty thinking. One is because Jesus is plenty glorious without culture. Amen. And secondly, Jesus is the one that can shape the culture, not the other way around. And we say that to our people. You know, that we can be influencers and do that without necessarily having to be influenced. And so at times I think we just take the whole discussion of influence and we just take ourselves out of it.
Yeah, and I was reading an article today, and it was talking about, it's kind of walking through Ben Franklin. Ben Franklin was a deist, but one of the greatest leaders, political leaders, this country has ever seen. And they're saying that, yes, even though obviously Christians will look at him and say, okay, he's off on the gospel. But what they were saying is the impact that people had in his life, his Calvinist father, he had plenty of family members and people in his life that were believers and that, you know, were Puritans even, and that said, and it influenced him. It helped in shaping and molding his thought process in politics and in his writings and those type things. And so even for someone that is not a Christian, he was influenced by, and that tells you kind of how far we've come, maybe some would say in the wrong direction, but he was influenced by those around him that cared enough about the gospel to say, this matters, so I need to have a conversation with you about the gospel.
Right.
And the importance of that, and then you see people like Russell Moore of the ERLC who's seeking to engage on a number of different levels about racial reconciliation and religious freedom. I think the communities that thrive mm-hmm. are communities that have local churches that are thriving.
Right. You know, and I think there's an element to us, to this discussion, that we just have to be mindful that there is value in preparation. In fact, we talk a lot about this as a church. There's value in studying the Word together, of course. There's value in many parents may feel led to put their children in some type of private Christian schooling, or maybe they would feel prompted to do some type of homeschooling option or whatever that may be. All of those things are appropriate, and as the Spirit might lead various individuals of faith towards those things, that is appropriate. But I think where we have to be careful is that we don't remain in a place of preparation, mm-hmm. that we eventually shift to a point of proclamation. And we cannot just simply proclaim to one another, but instead we have to engage our culture, mm-hmm. taking what we've learned, taking what we are gleaning from all of this preparation that we've had and maybe are still acquiring, but we at some point have to transfer that into a proclamation of the good news of Christ. And again, we don't do that simply to one another. We do that to those who also need to hear Christ because they've never heard of the gospel originally.
Yeah, and that's what if we go to Scripture, you know, Paul, when Paul goes to Athens, he was supposed to go there for holiday, just to kind of rest and relax. And it says that he's sitting there and he's looking around and his spirit, lowercase s, was prompted. Mm-hmm. And because he looked at the community that he was in and said, this is not okay.
Right.
And now I'm going to engage. I'm going to speak truth. I'm going to talk to folks. In some ways, where we would say, oh, that's seeker sensitive stuff, you know. And Paul's saying, well, I'm talking the way they know how to talk, and I'll talk to these folks the way they know how to talk.
Right.
And I think what was laid out there is he had discernment to say, to look around him at culture, and instead of going, okay, I'm just gonna bail, I'm gonna leave.
Right.
He went, I'm gonna engage. I'm gonna be present. I'm gonna have conversations. I'm not gonna water down the gospel. And those are things that Paul could teach us a lot of things. Yeah. But that's one thing that I always take away to go. Right now, the Lord has us in Knoxville. Yeah. So while He has us here, the spirit, the little s, and our gut needs to be prompted to look around and go, okay, we need to engage here. Mm. We have more to talk about when we come back.
It's hard to count it all joy, distracted by the noise, just trying to make sense of all.
Hey, we're back. It's Andrew Wood with Hope Resource Center, joined today by Pastor Jason Hayes from Shoreline Church. And you can learn more about Shoreline at shorelineknox.com. And it's about to start core classes. You want to touch on that real quick, and then I want to get into some life issues. But I know you're about to start core classes starting tomorrow night.
Yeah, absolutely. Tomorrow night we actually are providing four basic tracks. Just recognizing that we're trying to equip people from a lot of different places in their faith, and so we have a relational track, which is basically looking at the DNA of relationships. We have a financial track that includes Financial Peace University, mm-hmm, type option. Then we also have a doctrinal track, our worship pastor, who's not only a gifted musician and worship leader, but a gifted teacher, is actually talking about the theology of worship. Mm-hmm. And then we have a student track for middle school and high school students. So, by all means, if anybody's out there listening that's interested, come on our way, 6:30 on Wednesday nights at Shoreline.
Yeah, should be good. So as we talk about, Hope Resource Center is a life-affirming, the quickest way to explain it, it's a medical clinic that loves Jesus. So right. that's what we're driven by. So why is it we partnered with you? We've been partnering with y'all for a couple years now. Why is it important for you, as the pastor of a local church, to get involved in quote unquote pro-life work, pro-life issues, and partner with a place like Hope Resource Center?
Yeah. I mean, we have just absolutely been blown away by the opportunity to partner with you guys and just to see all the ways the Lord is working through the ministries of Hope. And I think a couple things draw us to that. One is we see that we are made in the image of God, and everyone is made in the image of God, and that includes the child that's born and the child that's in the womb. And mm-hmm. So as we consider that, we have to be mindful that if we're going to be as vocal and as adamant as we are about being pro-life, that means that we need to take care of not only those. If we're going to tell a mom that she needs to keep her child, then we need to be ready to help that mom. And one of the things that I love about you guys is you're not just, and you'll say this often, you're not just pro-baby.
Right.
You're pro-mom, you're pro-dad, you're pro-life in general. And so we just really naturally connect with being able to walk alongside folks that are taking, that life's taken a few turns that maybe they didn't expect. And in that, hopefully they'll find a blessing in that beautiful child. And so we just love partnering with you guys.
And, one statistic that's thrown out, I don't necessarily believe this statistic, but this is the one that the abortion lobby throws out. It's the one that that folks that are pro-choice throw out because it points to the greater, the number of abortions. But they'll say 1 in 3 women will have an abortion, right, which I really don't believe. But let's just go with that premise. So if that is true, that means that there's people inside, there's partners of Shoreline,
right,
people that are visiting Shoreline that are directly affected by right. the abortion issue, whether that be a man that drove a woman to an abortion clinic, right, a man that paid for it, a mom or dad that paid for it, a young lady that actually had an abortion. What type of atmosphere, as grace and gospel-loving people that believe that sin is sin,
right,
but also believe that the cross is the cross and that the tomb is empty.
Right.
From a pastor's standpoint, how important is it for you when you deal with this issue of life and abortion what's the best way to kind of toe that line of grace,
right,
in sin, and where do you, you know, how, as a pastor, what does that mean for you and the people that are at your church?
Yeah, I think you hit at it pretty well, is the reality that people in our audience look at abortion from a lot of different perspectives, and not necessarily perspectives that are oppositional to one another.
Sure.
But as you said, maybe a lady had an abortion 20 years ago, mm-hmm. and still deals with the guilt and the shame that's associated with that. As you said, maybe there's a husband who you know, drove his wife or drove a young lady somewhere along the way to have an abortion. Maybe there's physical ramifications that still exist with a mom or who would have been a mom, a lady. You know, we have all of these things, and yet then we also see a church that really bases everything we are on our firm biblical foundations. And so, how did those worlds collide? And ultimately, I would say we go back and we look at Jesus. Mm-hmm. Jesus never compromised the truth. Jesus never wavered on his proclamation, and yet always did that with a measure of grace that was not simply something that just came along with who he was, but something that was very identifiable to those that were around him. And so that's our hope. We hope that people won't just listen to us as it relates to abortion on a single Sunday, mm-hmm. And make their decisions, but rather they would have been a part of a congregation and a body that has loved them well, that knows no matter where they've been in the midst of the journey or where they may be, that they know that people are going to be there to care for them and love them and hopefully point them to the decisions that honor Christ.
Yeah, I was contacted by a church last week, and I'm meeting with them tomorrow and really looking forward to it. And the conversation went, and the guy said, we just want to do more for this issue. We want our congregation to do more than just sit here and hear from us about abortion and about life. And the gospel is a beautiful thing.
Right.
And so that's what I love about it. I love it when a church reaches out. Believe me, I've reached out to churches. I love it when a church reaches out and says, look, we want our people to be intentional on this issue. And that brings me to the next point, is we are very passionate about issues. We are issue-driven people. If you were on social media today, people are issue-driven people. That is, they care about, you name the issue, they care about it. But at times, they neglect the people that are directly affected by the mm-hmm. issues. And so just my standpoint on this, years ago, while I was in college and in my political days, that's how I was. That's how I operated. I saw people as means to an end, not as God created image bearers,
right.
But people that could help me win an argument, or antidotes that could help me win an argument. And what we have to do as pro-lifers, as people that celebrate the gift of life, is understand that even though we are passionate about that, that doesn't mean that the other side also wasn't created in the image of God.
Right.
And so help us out as a pastor to those that are listening and find themselves at times having so much anger and at mm-hmm. times, let's be honest, hatred in their heart toward the abortion lobby, toward that person that is, I remember when I was in college, I had a girl look at me and say, I love abortion. Mm-hmm. And the anger that came up inside of me, was part of it, certainly righteous anger. And I think was okay. But there was part of my anger that was sinful,
right?
Because I stopped seeing them as an image bearer, and I started seeing them as an enemy.
Yeah.
And so, for those listening, what would you say as a pastor for those that are saying, "Yeah, I'm here with this issue because of anger"?
Sure. I think there's two things. As you said, I think there is an appropriate place for righteous anger, mm-hmm. But there's a very strong distinction between righteous anger and hatred.
Sure.
And and the first thing that I would say is it's hard to hate people that you pray for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the more that you pray and the more that you really get on your knees before the Father and pray for people, the Lord not only receives those prayers, but he also does something pretty remarkable in your own heart in it. I know that's been the case for me. There's been times where I waited for my heart to be right to pray, and I never got around to praying. But instead, what I would do is I would pray for people, and the Lord would eventually transform my heart. I think the second piece of it is that it's hard to hate people At times, or maybe I should say, it's easier to hate people that don't have a face. Mm-hmm. You know, when you don't know the real story behind what's happened. Certainly, there are moments where you see someone who's simply been careless, someone who's simply choosing to do something very maliciously opposite to the things of God. But there's also times where you come in contact with someone and you say, "Man, you are hurting. You are beat up. You are worried about any number of things, whether it's how a boyfriend is going to receive this, or how parents are going to receive this, or you look at someone being a product of abuse after many years. I mean, there's no telling the story that some of these people have. And so, again, it's easier to gain compassion for people when you see the depths of their struggle. And so that would be my statement. You know, when we try to refute hatred, we pray and we actually get to know people, and we don't just have opinions against them. Instead, we have lives that come alongside them.
Yeah, and that's where change happens, is in relationships and willing to have a conversation with someone right. that even may disagree with you, but willing to sit at the same table.
Right.
I have family members that we disagree adamantly on issues. But what we have tried to do, and what I've seen happen over the last few months, is from my standpoint and their standpoint, getting to a place where we're going. But that doesn't change the fact that we're blood. Right. It doesn't change the fact that you were created for a purpose.
Right.
So let's have a conversation, and that's okay if we disagree.
Right.
And so I think if we get to a point where we are as passionate about people as we are about the issue, that, again, doesn't water down our stance. It just says, you know what, I care deeply about
right.
that person, even though we disagree. You know, we had the worship night with partnership with y'all last year mm-hmm. During the birthday of Planned Parenthood.
Right.
And we prayed for Cecile Richards. Absolutely. We prayed for the abortion clinics. That wasn't easy. That right. wasn't something that that came easy. But it's something that we need to do more often as we seek to see the Lord move in the hearts and minds of the people, and who can change them better than the right. sovereign creator of the
yeah,
universe?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. And you know, there's actually a unique connection here to evangelism. At the end of the day, we are not responsible mm-hmm. for fruit. God's going to do that, but we are responsible for presenting a really beautiful picture of the gospel. Yep. And that's not just true in our proclamations of evangelism, but also even in the way that we defend life.
Yep, yep. We'll be back in a sec.
There is a truth older than the ages. There is a promise.
And we're back. It's Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center, joined today by a very special guest.
Wow, very.
The Reverend.
Good grief.
Jason Hayes from Shoreline. You know, I spoke at a church a few weeks ago. And in the program or bulletin or worship guide or whatever churches are calling it these days.
The paper thing.
The paper thing. I opened it up and it said, speaker, .. Reverend Andrew Wood.
Man.
And I posted that on Instagram.
How did that feel?
It was pretty awesome. when I worked at the University of Tennessee, every now and then people would email me and they would address it Dr. Wood, which right. I don't have a PhD.
Right.
But I didn't correct
it. I say, there's no need to correct.
I would copy it and send it to my mom and say, look at this. How awesome is this? Kid from Cornersville who doesn't have a PhD is being called doctorate. So that's a win. That's a win in our family. But yes, Reverend was certainly made me feel good. So they hit, that is a love language of mine. Call me Reverend and you win that one.
Well, go ahead, Reverend.
Yeah, right. So how can people learn more about Shoreline? I gave the website a while ago. I know you're on all the social media places. Where are you located? What's the easiest way you can give a spiel? Hey, here's where we're located. This, you get to us.
Yeah, we're actually at 9635 Westland Drive. But the easiest way for us to kind of describe that is we are at the intersection of Westland and Pellissippi Parkway, or 140, whichever one
you
call
it. You can see it from the road.
You legitimately can see it from the highway. And so if you just pull off right there off Westland Drive, off 140 or Pellissippi, you'll see us just within a few hundred yards. And we'd love for you to come check us out. You can learn everything you need to learn at shorelineknox.com. Our website is updated. It gives you all the opportunities that we have in the life of our church, not simply to be fed, but also to get involved and to partner, as we described earlier.
What time do y'all meet, Sundays?
Yeah, so we meet at 9:15. I had to think about that, 9:15. Yep. and 10:45 on Easter Sunday. We'll actually be meeting at 8:30, 10, and 11:30.
There you go. All right, and then throughout the week you have life groups,
right,
that meet, you know, in different people's homes, I guess, all in different parts of Knoxville.
Correct. Yeah, we have a lot of different opportunities for anyone, a various life stage, whether it be age, if you're married, single, kids, without kids.
We have single looking to mingle?
Yes. We try not to elevate that too much, but it is out there. So anyways, we have life groups all around the community, and if there's something that you're interested in, you can simply let us know again on our website, or you come join us on a Sunday morning. We have a little place called Connection Point, and some great volunteers will point you that way, and they can answer any questions.
And your worship pastor, Chuck Hooten, probably wouldn't want us to say this, but very talented, very gifted, and has music on iTunes and in different places as well.
Yeah, one of the cool stories of Shoreline has been the Lord has just provided for us leaders that were far beyond what we deserved. And that includes our lay people, but it also includes just a really incredible staff that we've been fortunate to grow. And Chuck is one of those guys. And so Chuck and our worship ministry have put out a couple different albums, or three at this point. And so you can find those on Spotify. You can find those on
really
iTunes.
Good. Really
yeah,
good.
Yeah, not... I don't want to make a shot at traditional church music, but really, really well done.
Chuck is a mean organ player.
Yeah,
and
fantastic.
So it mostly is just that. Mostly it's just organ music.
Basically kind of a cappella and organ. Basically.
No, it is. It, trust me, it is really good. You will. The Christmas album was great. I would encourage you to look it up on iTunes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so we are so thankful for Shoreline and their partnership with Hope Resource Center and all the local churches that partner with us from all different types of worship styles and everything. It takes all of us, and we couldn't do the work we do at Hope without those partnerships. And so we are grateful for that. Again, this is 20 years of Hope. 2017, we are celebrating 20 years
Praise
of
God.
Hope Resource Center and over 25,000 patients seen. And we couldn't do that without your support, without the church's support. And so we are just grateful for that partnership. You can learn more about Hope Resource Center at investinghope.com. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram. Also, you can learn about the event, the banquet that's coming up in April. That's a fundraising banquet and just going to be a celebration of Hope in our 20 years. And we hope that you'll look into that. You can also hear this show on podcasts, on iTunes, and other places. Hopefully tomorrow I'll have it up for you. So thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.